let's talk about bone tissue. A bone tissue is a dynamic tissue that continually remodels itself. Bone is a connective tissue with a matrix that's hardened by minerals. And bones make up the skeletal system. Now let's review a few of these concepts. First is a dynamic tissue. Now, by dynamic, we mean it's going to be going through changes. It constantly renews itself. So the bones you had 7 years ago are not the same bones you have today because they went through remodeling. And we can think of remodeling just like on some shows on TV where you think of how you're going to remodel your kitchen. The point is we're going to remodel. So remodeling is exactly that. You got to demo or take out the old stuff, take out the old kitchen, and then you rebuild the new kitchen. That's exactly how bones work as well. Now, when we call bone a connective tissue, we're going to think back to histology when we talked about connective tissue, and we said at that time that a connective tissue is going to be really more about the matrix than about the cells themselves. We said, for instance, that the epithelial cells really make up the tissue of epithelium. But we said that the connective tissue is really made by the connective tissue cells, but what they make is a matrix or a substance that the connective tissue will really be. So when we look at bone, we see that we're going to have osteocytes and osteoblasts. These cells are going to be making the matrix. Really, the osteoblasts are going to be making the matrix. The osteocytes then will maintain the matrix. So the matrix is of significance. And like we said with like cartilage, the chondrocytes made the cartilage matrix, which makes the cartilage has its function of being like a rubbery substance. Whereas in this case, we have the osteoblast creating a hard substance. So we have bone. So bones make up the skeletal system, as we said. And the skeletal system is going to be all of your skeleton. And some of the functions of your skeletal system is going to be to support. And we can understand this easily because it's going to support our bodies. We're able to stand erect and not be like Jabba the Hutt because we have good support from our skeletal system. We also have protection, and this is obvious. If we look at our rib cage, it's going to be protecting our lungs and also our heart. If we look at our spinal cord, it's going to be protected by our spinal column. We also have our brain being protected by our skull. So we see a number of examples of protection. Also, movement is obvious at the joints. Now, blood formation may not be as obvious, but if we think of bone as really two kinds of tissue, well, it's not really two kinds, but think of it as having two parts. One part is going to be the compact bone, or the hard bone. The other is going to be a spongy bone. And the spongy bone is going to be the less hard, and it's going to be still supportive of the harder bone. And this is going to be the marrow that your dog loves so much. So the marrow of the bone is going to be the spongy bone, and this is going to be the area where we're going to be getting blood formation. We're also going to see that bone is going to be a mineral reservoir, and a reservoir is going to be an area where we can store stuff. So it's going to be an area where the body, if the body needs, it can go for minerals because that's where it stores its minerals. So if the calcium levels in our blood get low, the body has the ability to go in and take out the calcium from our bone and put it into the blood and raise that. Blood calcium levels are very important for a variety of things, for nerve function, for heart function. So it's better to take the calcium from the bone and maybe you get osteoporosis rather than die from not having your brain or your heart working properly. Also, there's going to be an electrolyte balance that's going to be occurring as well. Now remember that electrolytes are those components that are going to be electrical. They're going to be assisting in the electrical conductions in our bodies. So they're very important to have them in balance, particularly the calcium and phosphate ions. Also, there's going to be an acid-base balance ability as well because there's buffers that the blood has against excessive pH changes. So the body likes to stay relatively normal, or shall we say relatively neutral, in their pH, so around 7 we're talking about. So if the body goes a little bit too acidic into the 6 area, we want to bring it back. If it goes too alkaline, we want, into 8 area, we want to bring it back to the 7 or the neutral. So when we look further about the protection, storage, movement, and also blood formation, we see these are all going to be functions of the bone. Now, the shapes of the bone are going to be just a function of their function. So we have long bones that are going to assist in creating our limbs. We have short bones that are going to be basically being articulations or joints. We have flat bones that are going to assist in articulations as well. We have irregular bones which defy long, short, or flat. So these are going to be just irregular, such as the renowned sphenoid bone, which is the bone of bones. It's a venerable bone. Now the shapes of bones, as we said, are going to be long, short, flat, and irregular. Now the structure of long bone is going to be that there's going to be a part of the long bones that are going to have ends to them, and the ends are going to be called the epiphysis. The epiphysis is going to be both a distal and a proximal epiphysis. We also then have a middle portion called diaphysis. So the diaphysis is going to be the shaft. Both either ends are going to be considered the epiphysis. Now the middle part is going to be called the medullary area is going to be called the marrow cavity. So our marrow cavity is going to be our medullary cavity. It's going to be where the marrow is. And our endosteum is going to contain osteoprogenitor cells. If we look at the word osteo, we know that has to do with bone. If we look at pro, we know that's going to be positive 4. And genitor, we know, of course, comes from like the first book of the Bible, Genesis, which was the start or the beginning. So these are going to be bone cells that are going to assist in creation of new bone cells. We have periosteum. Peri means around. Osteum means bone. So this is going to be a membrane that's going to be around the bone. It has two layers. It has an outer layer for support, a fibrous layer. An inner layer for genesis of a bone. So you have an osteogenic layer. Genesis or beginning of osteo or bone. So you have the outside supportive layer and inside layer where we're actually going to be getting bone growth as well. Now we also have articular cartilage. This is what we alluded to previous about connective tissue, and this is going to be hyaline cartilage. It's going to cover the surface of the ends of the epiphysis, both the distal and the proximal epiphysis. Now some histology. Of the most important histology of the bone is going to be the osteoblasts and the osteoclasts. The osteoprogenitor cells, we talked about them before, they're going to be making these cells. They're going to be undifferentiated. That means they're unspecialized. That means they really don't know what they want to be when they grow up. It's sort of a little bit like stem cells. But the key cells we're concerned with here are osteoblasts and osteoclasts. The osteocytes, as you remember, are going to be previous osteoblasts. Remember that the cytes are older cells and the blasts are younger cells. Remember, a kid has a blast, and if you get older, you might need glasses because you have a problem with your sight. So the osteocytes are going to be former osteoblasts. The osteoblasts are going to be the ones that are going to be forming bone. The osteoclasts are going to be doing just the opposite. They're going to be antagonistic to the osteoblasts. So think of osteoblast, the B, as being a builder. And think of the osteoclast, the CL, as being a clubber. In other words, you club down the structure. If you're making a new kitchen, you'd have to take a big club or big hammer and demo that old kitchen. And then you would want your osteoblasts, your builders, to come back in and create your new kitchen. So when we look at the matrix, remember this is that hard aspect of the bone that was produced by the osteoblasts. This contains a product called calcium carbonate. We all know the bone has calcium in it, but specifically it's calcium carbonate. It's also calcium phosphate, but most significantly is hydroxyapatite. Hydroxyapatite is the primary salt that makes bone hard. So this is a component that's important if a person is taking a vitamin supplement or mineral supplement for osteoporosis. It's a good idea to make sure that they have hydroxyapatite in that product that they're taking. Now the matrix, once again, is going to be a framework. It's going to be that hard portion. But it's going to be a framework that's going to be sort of made or modeled around collagen fibers. And you remember that collagen fibers are those thick fibers that we see in connective tissue. So we have a structure of these fibers, these collagen fibers. And then we're going to have calcium mineralize around that. So you're going to have other minerals as well as calcium, but calcium is going to be the big one that's going to mineralize around that. And these are going to cause it to be hard, and it's also going to give it tensile strength. And tensile strength is the phenomena of being able to bend a little bit without breaking. That's why if you've ever fallen and not broken a bone, it's because of tensile strength. You're able to sort of, your bones are sort of able to bend a bit. To prove this to yourself, just take your wrist with one hand and just wrap it around your wrist, and then just push your hand together, like make a fist around your other wrist, and just push together, and you'll feel that your bones sort of give a little bit. There's a variety of reasons for that. There's a ligament between the two bones, but also the bones themselves are giving a little bit, and that's their tensile strength. You can think of it as if you were to take a pencil and try to, you know, have one end of the pencil, the other end of the pencil, put your thumbs in the middle, and sort of try to break it. If you don't put too much pressure on it, you'll feel how it sort of has a sort of like a bouncing effect to it. Not enough to break it, but just enough to feel that there's that. It has a tensile strength, and that's what we're talking about. The same thing with our bones also have this tensile strength as well. And we can think of the analogy of, if you've ever seen them make a driveway or a concrete roadway, what they do is they'll put down, first of all, a iron-like substance. It's like a crisscross of iron bars, called rebarb. Rebar, I think. And they put that down first, and then they pour the concrete over it. You would think concrete would be strong enough by itself. But by having this additional iron within, this additional metal within the concrete, it actually gives it this tensile strength. So it will be actually stronger than if they didn't do that. So that's really a good analogy for our, you know, for our bones. Now this matrix, or the hardness of the bone, or shall we say the tissue of the bone, is going to be composed of minerals. I think we know this, calcium, and other minerals as well. But what most people don't realize is that that's only half. But the other half is going to be water and also protein. So we need to have these things in our diet if we have problems with our bone. Now, if we have a compact bone is going to be characterized, as we already said, really, there's going to be three parts to the bone. It's going to be the compact bone or the spongy aspect. Now, the spongy bone, as we said, is going to be at either ends of the right around the diaphysis, and this is going to be the area where we're going to be having the blood being produced. We also have dense bone tissue that consists of osteons. Now, the idea is this: we have compact bone. And compact bone implies that the bone itself is going to be compact. So that means it's going to be hard, and it's going to have a problem. And the problem is it's going to have a difficulty getting nutrients to the cells that are there, to the osteocytes. So we have to figure out a way, a system, if you will, of getting the blood to the osteocytes. And the way we do this is through a system. The system is called the Haversian system, because it's created by this guy, Haversian, I guess. And the fundamental of the Haversian system is going to be the osteon. The osteon is the basic structural unit of the Haversian system. So what you can think of in compact bone is a bunch of circles within the compact bone, and each circle is going to be an osteon. Now, when we look at the osteon itself, we'll see that we'll have a central portion or a darker portion. That darker portion is going to be called the central canal, also called the Haversian canal. So that central portion is going to be considered the central canal, and then that's going to have blood vessels in it, as well as a lymphatic vessel, as well as a nerve vessel. We like to think of it as a vein, artery, and a nerve. It's going to be going through there, like a little mini bus going through there, a van. And that's going to then go, or the, let's say the blood is going to then go to the canaliculi. And the canaliculi, easy for you to say, the canaliculi are going to be like little canals that are going to allow for the nutrients to go to the little dots. And those little dots are going to be the osteocytes. So the basic way it works is that you go from the central canal, then the nutrients go through the canaliculi on their way to the osteocyte. Now the osteocyte sits in a bathtub, and the bathtub is called a lacuna. So a lacuna is going to be the bathtub where the osteocyte will be sitting. So if you were going to order a pizza, what you would do is tell the delivery person, first you have to go to the central canal, then you have to go to the canaliculi, then you have to go to the lacuna, and then finally you get to the osteocyte. That's bringing nutrients to, or pizza to. How about if we want to bring nutrients away? Well, we have to go just in the opposite direction. We go from the osteocyte through to the canaliculi, from the lacuna, first of all, let's start over. The osteocyte, which sits in the lacuna, then we go to the canaliculi, and then we go to the central canal. So that's the way waste products would go, or the pizza box. That's how the pizza box would get out of the bone. So it's going to go either way. We're going to go from central canal, canaliculi, then to the lacuna, and then to the osteocyte. Or if we're taking waste away, we have the osteocyte from the lacuna to the canaliculi out the central canal. So that's basically the way that we're going to be looking at that working. Now, there's also some other structures that are of significance. And if we look at the osteon, you'll see that there's that central canal, but then there's also the dark black dots, and the dark black dots will be going around the central canal as if it were like a tree that you just cut down. Those would be like the rings. Between the rings are going to be an area of matrix. So you have a bunch of osteocytes making a ring, then you have another row of osteocytes making another ring. Between those two rows is called the lamella. So the lamella is going to be the area between the rows of osteocytes. And it's going to be containing the matrix of the bone. Now, spongy bone doesn't have the problem that the compact bone does. Spongy bone is spongy. It has holes in it. So blood vessels can just go through it willy-nilly. There's no problem with that. So spongy bone is going to be easier to get blood to it, so it doesn't need a haversion system. It does have a few osteons, but only a few. And why is that? Because it's able to get its nutrients through just the regular blood supply. It doesn't have to have a special system. We also call spongy bone cancellous bone as well. There's another name for that. Now, spongy bone will actually form itself as the bone gets stress on it. So, for instance, if we add weight to a bone, the inside spongy bone will actually grow according to where the weight is to support the inside of the bone. So spongy bone is going to be creating what we call trabeculae. And trabeculae are going to be these lines that are going to provide strength. So they're going to be lines within the bone that's going to be providing the strength with little weight, and they're going to really assist in the structure of the bone as far as its stability and as far as its ability to bear weight. So even though spongy bone is not as hard, it still nonetheless is going to be creating these lines that are going to be supportive for the bone structure. Now, there is an intramembranous and also an inchondral ossification. Now, intramembranous implies it's going to be inside. So this forms in flat bones. It's a multipotent mesenchymal cell. Mesenchymal cells, as you remember from histology, are going to be primitive, almost stem cell-like. These mesenchymal cells are going to differentiate directly into osteoblasts, which of course are going to create bone. So we have intermembranous ossification is going from mesenchyme to bone, whereas in chondral, it's going to go through a cartilage model on its way to becoming bone. So intermembranous ossification does not have this cartilaginous model. And you've heard before, you know, the cartilage is going to become bone. Well, that's what we're talking about with inchondral. Remember, chondral, mean a chondrocyte, was a cartilage cell. Endo means inside. So literally from the inside out, we're going to be having cartilage being replaced by bone. So this involves, first of all, embryonic bone formation, a growth in the length of the long bones, and also it's going to be assisting in fracture healing as well. So this process is going to be cartilage becoming bone, which is distinct from the other kind of ossification that we mentioned. Remember, ossification is just the process of becoming bone. So when we look at bone growth and remodeling, we see that bone growth and remodeling themselves throughout our lives. All throughout our lives we have this remodeling occurring. We have a tearing down, we have a building up. So we, of course, if we are going to be using our bones more, such as in a lot of activities, and manual labor, for instance, we, of course, are going to have an increase of mass of bone because we put more stress on it. Most bone, as we said, is going to be in chondral ossification from the inside out. So cartilage forms, and then cartilage grows, and then bone replaces the cartilage from the inside. So, as we said, we know that we have the bone being a reservoir for minerals, particularly for calcium. So the blood levels of calcium ions are very important, as we already said, in cardiac, nerve, also in enzymes for reactions, and also blood as well. So if the blood levels get too low, the bone will be the reservoir, or the body will go to the bone and take out the calcium that it needs, or any other minerals that are stored there. Now, hormones are going to have an effect on bone growth. The big one's going to be human growth hormone. And we know this from an individual who has, you know, he's in his early teens, and all of a sudden he shoots up. So he has that tremendous growth, and that's being fueled by the human growth hormone. So what happens is that we have an increase in calcitonin. And calcitonin is going to be the major hormone that's going to assist in creating bone. So variations of these hormones can either lead into giantism or into dwarfism. An individual that has decreased human growth hormone is going to become a dwarf. One that has too much is going to become a giant. It's going to be really, really tall. Now, at puberty, the sex hormones, of course, are going to be stimulating growth and modifying the skeleton. Also, we have thyroid hormone, which is called calcitonin, which is going to promote growth, as we just said. The antagonistic hormone to calcitonin is called parathyroid hormone. Parathyroid hormone is going to do exactly the opposite that calcitonin does. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. When we look at bone homeostasis, we already said that we sometimes want to take our bone and remodel it. That means we need to get rid of the old bone tissue and put in the new. We need to get rid of the old kitchen and put in a new kitchen. So the way this works is that we're going to use our clubs. We're going to use our osteoclasts to destroy the old tissue. And then we use our osteoblasts to create the new tissue. So if we increase osteoblasts, or shall we say, increase osteoclasts activity, and decrease osteoblast activity, this causes bone loss. But if we increase our osteoblastic activity, decrease our osteoclastic activity, this causes bone creation. So review that so you get the concepts in mind. Now, an example of bone remodeling would be having dental braces. Individuals who have their teeth, let's say you have a big gap in the middle of your tooth, what they'll do is they will take a brace and put it between the two teeth, actually all your teeth, and they'll put pressure on that bone so that pressure on your teeth so that the bone underneath, in let's say it's in your front teeth, and then the bone underneath in your maxilla, what will happen is that the pressure that is being put on that tooth will slowly over time cause a osteoclastic activity, or the bone will start to become absorbed. And then, as you maintain that pressure, you'll have an osteoblastic activity that will fill in the areas where the osteoclastic activity was so active. So if you picture you have that gap tooth, you have your braces. The braces are pulling your teeth together. So as they pull the teeth together, you're getting osteoclastic activity. Once there's holes made in the bone, then you'll get osteoblastic activity that will fill in. And hopefully then your teeth won't have that gap. So that's the idea of the remodeling of both the maxilla and also the mandible. Now sometimes people break their bones, and if they do break a bone, this can be a variety of ways that can happen. One is that they can just have too much force on it, called a stress fracture. So this would be, for instance, car accidents or falls or in athletics. It can also be a pathological fracture. This is where you're going to break the bone because you have some kind of other disease, such as bone cancer. So there's a tumor in there weakening the bone, and then it just fractures. Or osteoporosis can also be a cause of fractures. Now, a lot of older individuals are afraid of breaking their hip. And there's a lot of speculation out there on what happens, which came first, the chicken or the egg. Because some feel that what happens is that the hip actually breaks, or where the femur meets the acetabulum. There's an area where it's called the head of the femur, which is connected to the neck. So some feel that the neck just breaks and the person falls. Others feel that the person falls and then it breaks. So the jury's really out on that, but it's an interesting distinction between the two. Some types of bone fractures are going to be a displaced or open, or can also have a closed displaced as well. If it's open, that means it broke the skin. If it's closed and displaced, it means it hasn't broken the skin, but still the two bones aren't together. We can also have a green stick fracture. Now, green stick fractures are going to be where just one part of the bone, usually just one part of the periosteum, is actually splintering, just as if you took a green stick and tried to break it. You would only have one portion of it being broken. So really we're going to be getting a problem with the periosteum, also with breaking part of that compact bone. We also have comminuted. Now comminuted is going to be sort of like a telescoping effect. It's going to be where the bone actually starts to implode on itself. This, of course, is going to be usually a trauma where we have too much force going through the foot, for instance, going into the tibia. The tibia just sort of like implodes on itself. We can also have a linear fracture. You've heard of these as hairline fractures. This is just where the bone just has like a line in it. We also have a transverse non-displaced. Transverse non-displaced is going to be sort of like a comminuted, but not as bad, because we just have basically a line across. Whereas a oblique non-displaced will be a line not across, but rather obliquely. A spiral fracture is going to be where we're going to have force. It's going to be going one way on a bone and on the other end of the bone the other way. So we actually have like a spiraling effect. So it's going to be breaking sort of like as if you were to take a big, you know, loaf of bread and on one end take your hand and turn it right and the other one turn it left. And that would be exactly what happens with a spiral fracture. Now, a Colles fracture is going to be where we break the wrist. And this usually happens to too much hyperextension. A person falls on their wrist, and they hyperextend, and that causes the wrist to break. We also have a Potts fracture. A Potts fracture is an unusual fracture. It's very, very traumatic, because what happens is that the calcaneus goes in a different way. Your foot will normally go outwards. So if you're walking along and you sprain your ankle, that's because the ankle will go outwards because of the way that it's constructed. It'll go inwards. Sorry, not outwards, inwards. So when you sprain your ankle, your big toe goes up. So you sprain it that way. The reason that is because your fibula, which is the bone that's on the outside, is longer than your tibia is. So you're going to be having your big toe go in, and that's going to be an ankle sprain. But in Potts fracture, it goes just the opposite. Your ankle actually goes out, not in. So your big toe goes down. So as your big toe goes down, it does a variety of things. And one thing it does is it will cause the fibula to be broken, so it actually fractures it. And there's a real strong ligament on the inside of your ankle called the deltoid ligament. It's so strong that it will not break. When you sprain your ankle normally, when your toe goes down, when your toe goes up, that's going to be where you're going to actually tear some of those ligaments that are on the outside of your ankle. So that's going to be a ligament tear, or we call it an ankle sprain. Whereas when you have your toe go down, that's going to be where we're going to have a Pott's fracture, because that ligament that's on the inside of your ankle, the deltoid ligament, is going to pull on the tibia. And the ligament's not going to break, but it's going to pull on the tibia, and the tibia will break. It'll actually pull off a piece of the tibia. So you can see a Pott's fracture is pretty severe. Usually they need to use pins and other things to correct that, or to at least assist in the healing of that. So the way to remember this is, if you're walking along with your dog, who happens to be a collie, and he pulls too hard on the leash, then you might get a collie's fracture. And if you were to walk along the same road and you see that there's a pothole and you fall into it, you could have a Pott's fracture. And if you're smoking, well, that's another story. So when we look at healing of the fractures, most of them are going to take 8 to 12 weeks. That's a general ballpark. But if you're elderly, then it may take a little bit longer. So we're not really that concerned, but we are concerned that if a person doesn't seem like they're healing within 8 weeks, then there may be things that we could do, such as electrical stimulation, or give proper nutrients, such as horsetail herbs, and also put weight on it, which is going to assist as well. So the stages of healing are, first of all, going to be a hematoma. Now, the hematoma's purpose is to stop blood flow. So we don't want the person to bleed to death. The second thing is we get a granulation tissue. Now, granulation tissue is going to be a stand-in tissue. It's not really what the tissue you want to stop at, but it certainly is a good stand-in tissue. Now, the callus is going to be where we have an overgrowth of bone. So the callus formation is going to be really a hyper-osteoblastosis, I guess you could call it. Too much osteoblasts, but that's okay. Because then we get remodeling. So as we put pressure on it, as we start to work with it, we'll start to see the callus formation will decrease if we can put enough pressure on it. If we have it, for instance, if we have a femur fracture, then we'll have a callus formation, but because you put so much weight on it, the callus will probably dissolve. Whereas if you get a fracture of your clavicle, that usually will remain. So you usually have a bump on your clavicle, and that's that callus formation. Why? Because you can't put enough pressure on your clavicle unless you were to walk on your hands, I guess. That would be the only way. So when we look at some bone diseases, we see that we have a Paget's disease. We also have osteomalacia and osteoporosis. Paget's disease is going to be a disease of massive osteoclastic resorption and extensive bone formation. So what we're looking at is massive osteoclastic. Remember, osteoclasts are going to be the guys who are going to be destroying bone. The body then freaks out and says, oh, I need to make more bone, but it makes too much bone. And eventually what happens is their bones get thicker and thicker and thicker. So their skull gets thicker and thicker and thicker. They start to lose their hearing because their auditory meatus actually closes down, and there's no room for their brain, so they ultimately die. But you can also, of course, have less problems. You can have a mild form of Paget's that never really causes that, but a real malignant form of Paget's is pretty devastating. Now, there's also an osteomalacia and also a rickets. Rickets, it happens in young kids. Osteomalacia will happen in adults. It's a softening of the bone due to vitamin deficiency, usually vitamin D. So a person will have a deficiency of vitamin D, and because if you're a kid, and because of the kid being having weight in his torso and the bones being soft, what happens is he gets bow legs. because the weight pushes down on those soft bones. The adult doesn't get the bow legs because their legs are already, been formed. But they do get still problems with their bones with osteomalacia. But can be corrected really easily by, having the proper nutrition. Osteoporosis is very common, as most people know. The pathophysiology is estrogen maintains the density in both sexes and inhibits resorption by osteoclasts. So osteoclasts are really kept down by estrogen. But once the estrogen starts to decrease as an individual ages, then we're going to be getting more osteoclastic activity or more destruction of the bone. So the testicles and the adrenals produce estrogen in the male, but in the woman, a lot of the estrogen is coming from their ovaries. Once their ovaries start to not function properly, after they get into menopause, then now their levels will drop, whereas the males tend to be maintained. So we have bone loss, and also they become brittle. We're worried about fractures of the hip, the wrist, the vertebral column. Particularly in the vertebral column, we get compression fractures. This can lead to bad problems such as pneumonia. Now, why would they get pneumonia? Because they're laying around, and they're laying around in a hospital usually, and there's lots of bugs in the hospital, and they get pneumonia, and they die from that. Also, they could get embolism as well. Remember, there's that marrow, and that marrow can break off, and portions of it can float in the blood and cause problems with the lungs. We also have a dowager's hump, or a widow's hump, from the deformed spine, because the vertebrae will actually collapse, causing the back of the spine to push out, as if they had a hump back there. And the nutrition, of course, for bones is going to be vitamin A, and vitamin D, and vitamin C. And we also want to avoid some things, such as soda drinks, particularly cola drinks. You'll look on these cola drinks and see there's phosphoric acid that's directly opposed to bone formation. So we'll decrease those things. Also, we want to be mindful of what they're drinking as far as their water is concerned. If they have unfiltered water that they're drinking, they're probably drinking a lot of fluoride, because fluoride's in our water supply. If it's not filtered, then that also can cause osteoporosis. It antagonizes the formation of bone, and it actually antagonizes calcium. So you want to make sure that the individual is drinking good quality water as well. And we need, of course, to have supplements, such as calcium and phosphorus, magnesium, and also manganese. They did an experiment with chickens. They decided they would like to make a boneless chicken because they wanted to increase their product, their profits. So they played around with the chicken feed, and they took out manganese. And they found that their chickens were boneless. They're just laying in the yard. They couldn't even sit up. So they did an x-ray, and no, they were wrong. They still had bones, but their ligaments were so weak that they laid over. So they put the manganese back in, and then the ligaments came back, and they were stronger again, and they quit futzing around with that, trying to get better profits. But this says to us that if we know somebody that has multiple joint problems, we want to make sure they get enough manganese. Usually about 37 milligrams is recommended per day to assist in making the ligaments stronger. Now, we all know that exercise is good for us, but it's very, very important for bone. So it's a response to mechanical stress that increases the deposition of mineral salts and the production of collagen fibers, which aids in osteoporosis. You need to remember, of course, that when you put more stress on the bone, then you also are creating those trabeculae, which are supporting the bones as well. If you remove mechanical stress, this is going to weaken bones through demineralization. We used to think, for instance, a person had a fracture of their hip, they should stay in bed until it heals. Oh no, they should get up as soon as they can. It does two things. One, it causes mechanical stress to help the bone heal. And two, it also gets them moving so they won't come down with pneumonia. And weight-bearing activity helps to rebuild and retain bone mass. And of course, this would be such things as walking or running or even bike riding. Water sports are not necessarily weight-bearing because of the fact that you're being buoyant in water. So you want to have other activities, weightlifting, that are going to be actually putting stress on the bones themselves. So otherwise, we don't want demineralization. So thanks for attending this podcast, and we'll talk to you again on Anatomy on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stoddard saying, see ya.